Hello, everyone. Thank you for being here on a hot July afternoon on a Friday. You know the drill. We're joined by our CEO, Rodrigo Costa. Gonçalo, our CFO, Gonçalo Soares, will make his results presentation. And then we'll be open the floor for we'll be opening the floor for questions. We're expecting an interesting call, Rodrigo.
Thank you, Ana. Good afternoon, and thank you for joining us for the results conference call. The quarter went smoothly from an operations perspective, and we don't have much to report other than this week announcement. I assume that you probably will be interested in discussing the recent acquisition, and we will address that at the end, especially during the Q&A. Starting with the results, EBITDA was in line with the market expectations, slightly below what we presented a year ago, but we must adjust the numbers to the interest rate evolution, and that was normal. As expected, we had a decline in our RAB that was partially offset by the Electrogas and Port Cash contributions. And in fact, this is why we decided on the strategy we are executing. Without local growth, we are finding and executing on ways to bring us to a stable situation. On the financial, I guess we were able to surprise on the positive side, given that the debt is lower than a year ago. The energy levies continues to penalize our net income, and in that front, no progress has been made. The court process is moving slowly, as expected, and we cannot report any news at this time. Just the fact that we keep our focus on the legal dispute, and we are waiting for the next year's state budget to understand how the government is planning to move forward with the tax. We still believe the progress will be made, but it's difficult to quantify at this moment. At the operational level, we got new historical highs in wind and in photovoltaic generation. Our Sines LNG terminal remains very busy. In fact, the terminal reached the highest utilization rate ever. We handled over a tanker per week during the first 6 months of the year. The previous record was in the first half of 2017 with 22 ships, and within the same period, we have reached 33 this year. The quarter has been a busy one for our infrastructure people. We are providing good assistance to the government agencies that is running all the renewables push. And as we said before, once the new generation projects are approved, we will be able to better understand the impact in our investment plans. Finally, 3 days ago, we announced the acquisition of Transemel in Chile. The investment we are doing follows our successful experience in this market. We are already there through Electrogas. Our results encourage us to research new opportunities, and we closed this new investment this week. The asset is very good. The deal terms were fair. The outlook is very positive. It's a modest investment, but quite important for us. The same conservative precautions were applied for investment research and decision. Now we will have to execute under the same principles that we applied to Electrogas and Portgas projects, understand the business, and that's what we do best. Priority to the operations efficiency and safety and financial discipline. And from my side, now this is all, and I will, Gonzalo will take the floor now, and I will return for the Q&A.
Okay, hello, good afternoon to you all. So as Rodrigo say, this is, in terms of results, a non-eventful quarter and semester. Results were broadly in line with what we have expected. EBITDA totaling those 247.4 million, a drop of 2%. There's a couple of items which are more timing issues that I'll address a little bit later on that explain part of this drop, but most of the explanation is the lower rates of return that we knew that were coming. Portgas and Chile, although small, have been contributing positively to EBITDA, which is good. Hence, net profit came down around 1.8 million by 3% without any, I'd say, major surprises. Net debt continued to improve and reduce along the year versus last year. The cost of net debt is still a little bit better year on year, but stabilizing, as you can see, and as we said. And CapEx is pretty well underway, in this year for us to beat what was our business plan interval in terms of the business plan, in terms of CapEx. So if you look at slide number 3, I'll just go over it. It's just the main numbers, nothing to comment there. So moving to slide number 4, you can continue to appreciate the drop in the in the 10-year Portuguese bond yields. They are at extremely low level as of now. They continue to decrease. Mr. Draghi comments yesterday do not give us any good news in this front. So when he sees that we don't like what we see, it seems that rates may be at low levels for a little bit longer. That being said, you can see that the reductions in the rate of return are smaller than those drops. In gas, they are at the floor, and so I think that we were a little bit insulated, and we've been able also on the funding part to try and manage this, namely before, but still now. What can we see if we move to slide number 5, and talking a little bit about CapEx, is, as I said, CapEx is well underway this year. I think we'll be able to beat, as we had said before, our goal that we stated in the business plan. It's still early on, as you know, but I think it's a good sign that it is going up around 26%, and transfers to RAB are also going up. And these were several projects that some of them were waiting for specific licenses, some of them have a slight delays at the end of the year. So these are things that were brought into the regulated asset base at the beginning of the year, and that if you want, Yvonne can give you a little bit more color on what they are. But I'd say that things are, I'd say, pretty well in line with what we expected. We even have a small delay on the distribution part in gas, but I think that when the year ends, we'll be delivering on the CapEx that we told you that we would. Unfortunately, and you see that on slide number 6, and despite this fact, this is a year of pressure in terms of RAB. We know this. I think this will be less, you'll see a little bit less red at the end of the year, but of course, this is what we knew when we also acquired some other assets. We knew that this was the pressure that was coming. Okay. And let me just point out the increase in Portgás, which is the only asset that is increasing at expected levels, even a little bit better the regulated asset base versus what was our objective. Slide number 7, you put the two together, so you see the evolution of assets and the evolution of the rates. In the transmission business, you see that both are a little bit elements of pressure, so there's a declining ROAR and a declining asset base, but this was completely expected. In Portgás, you see that the ability to increase the regulated asset base allows us to compensate for the decrease in ROAR. So I'd say that this is what you were also expecting, and so no news here. Moving into costs and to slides 8 and 9, and starting with slide 8. So I'd say that you see here costs pretty flat on the quarter. I'm not going to go, but if you see then on the next, you see also that core OPEX is growing around 0.8. But let me give you a couple of comments on how costs are behaving. In terms of external supplies, as in previous quarters, João can give you a little bit more of color of this also. There is an exceptional activity in the terminal, and so this translates into electricity costs, which have a relation to revenue. So part of these external costs, around 1.3, relate to this, And so they are actually costs that have a margin, but you don't see it here. The second thing that I wanted to comment, and namely on the personnel costs, is that this has two, I'd say, two things that you have to be aware. The first one is that there's a little bit of a transfer of costs between Portgás and the transmission business, because as we've told you, we concentrated certain functions in our shared services area. So there's a little bit of transfer, around 200,000-300,000 euros from Portgás to the not the transmission business, but to what appears here under the transmission business. Okay? The second thing is that there was a change of accounting in terms of how you recognize the extra salaries you pay in vacation time. We recognized everything already in the month of June. It's completely a timing issue, so at the end of the year, you will not see an increase of personnel because of this, but in the middle of the year, you see around a 750,000 increase. So there's around 1 million euros of personnel that is increasing here on this red line, which is mostly a timing issue. Headcount is at 690, and is, well, is actually a little bit below of what we expect. In Portgás, I think there's a lot of impact. A big part of this is relating to subsoil occupation levies that have decreased or that are lower, and so you see them here in Portgás. Part has to do with costs from the LPG business that are not here. Part have to do with that personnel issue that I told you that came to the transmission side, and part of it is just the fact that they really did decrease costs along the way. Okay? Bear in mind that the costs that I referred to, the subsoil, are completely passed through because we pass them to the consumer, so they are shown here. So either increase or decrease, for us, it's completely irrelevant, but it's important for you when you see that change in cost to understand that. Okay, you see that in slide number 9. You see that on the costs, which before core OpEx, there's a lot of them that are stable, but there's a lot of them, namely the subsoil, that is decreasing because of that. The ITC mechanism has more to do with exports and imports of electricity, which, if you are curious, João can also give you a little bit of color later on, because there's been a lot of. I'm giving him a lot of things to comment. So if you move into slide number 10, you just have the summary. So, this is what we saw. So you see this dynamic of asset remuneration, and then this dynamic of OpEx contribution, but which actually, given what I told you, is actually slightly positive. It's negative because of this timing issues. And then you have this positive effect, both of Portgás, and you also have a positive impact of Eletrogás. Eletrogás, although small, this year is going pretty well. EBITDA local is growing around 15%. This is mainly driven because of the increase in interruptible contracts, driven by the import of gas from Argentina. And that has led that the contribution to REN is now at mid-year, close to 4 million euros, which is almost 30% year-on-year increase versus last year. So it is small, but it is going in the right direction. Moving to slide 11 and commenting a little bit, so D&A, nothing in particular to comment. Relating to taxes, Rodrigo already mentioned that we don't have any major news on the special levy. The only good thing is that because assets went down, the special levy also went down a little bit. So nothing to add. The rest are completely in line with our expectation in terms of effective tax rate. In terms of financial results, you see this improvement of 0.5 million. This is actually going down around 1.5 million. Again, there is a timing issue here, because last year, the dividend from Mozambique was already received in June. This time it was not, and so there is more or less 1 million euros versus last year that you have less here. So the reality of the financial cost is that they went down around 1.5, and this is, on one side, the result of the reduction of the rate, which is very small by now, so we are kind of stabilizing in this low 2%. It is also the result, and you can see that on slide number 12, of the reduction of net debt that we have been continuing. So net debt has decreased more significantly in the first quarter. In the second quarter, as you know, we pay the dividends. And so the next two quarters, except for the fact of this M&A transaction that we did, the next quarters will also be cash flow positive. So you'd probably end up at the end of the year reducing in line with what we have told you, we'll be reducing around 50 or 75 million versus 18 year end. But because of the acquisition, it's going to be a little bit different. So moving to slide 13, this is, I'd say, the summary of everything else. Nothing to explain. So this decrease of 1.8, again, if you put this into context and you consider those couple of timing issues that I told you about, it will actually be more on the flattish side than on decreasing 3%. So final remarks on 14 and then waiting to comment on the rest. So pretty, I'd say, good and solid results in terms of financials. Continue to manage well on the operating side, continue to manage well the financial costs. And both Portgás and Eletrogás are contributing positively. And just a final word, I'm not going to talk a lot because I'll leave that to the Q&A, but we did announce this acquisition of Transemel. This is completely within what we had told you that we would be doing in our business plan. We had said that we were going to continue to do this disciplined growth outside of Portugal. This is what we have done. We waited 18 to integrate Portgás well. That job was done, and so we now were able to capture an additional, I'd say, incremental growth opportunity in Chile, which is a market that we know a little bit better by now. Let us see what specific questions you have about that. So thank you very much, and we're open for any questions you have.
Thank you very much. As a reminder, to ask a question over the phone today, please press star then 1 on your telephone keypad and wait for your name to be announced. You can cancel the request by pressing the hash key. Once again, star then 1 if you'd like to ask a question over the phone today. The first question we have today comes from the line of Sara Piccinini from Mediobanca. Please go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon, and thanks for taking my questions. Sorry, I have quite a few questions on the deal, so I'll maybe start from some and then I can follow up later. So on this acquisition in Chile, I guess this will be fully consolidated. So if you can help us giving some other details, such as maybe the EBIT and also net income contribution, and also maybe the cost of debt of this acquisition, so we can calculate the accretion, and then if you can, again, give us an indication about the accretion of this deal. So this would be the first question, if you can help us to calculate the EPS accretion. Then the second question is on the significant EBITDA growth that you have indicated. So cash flow, EBITDA is going to increase 35% until 2023. So what justifies this growth, and these can be sustainable in the long term? What is your expectation of the EBITDA growing in the long term? And then about the CAPEX, you have to say that this asset has already a CAPEX plan of 60 million until 2023. How this CAPEX will be distributed through the years? Thank you.
or is this hello? Sorry, this was on mute. I was already answering. So let me start with the last question on the CapEx plan. So I'm not going to give you exact numbers, but I'd say if you want a ballpark figure, around three quarters of that CapEx is going to be done in 19 and 20. And then the remainder, the other quarter, is going to be done in 21 and 22. So that's more or less the logic, okay? So in terms of the EBITDA growth that you mentioned, so there's, an EBITDA growth, which is this 18 to 19, and that is driven by several things. It's driven, one, specifically by some CapEx that is being concluded this year, okay? And secondly, because there's some revenues that derived from past regulatory adjustments that were done. So that explains most of that difference. From then onwards, it's mostly related to the fact that we are investing in the company, okay? Yes, we are going to fully consolidate the company, so you have a good idea of what the EBITDA accretion can be in terms of the company. So I think that on that front, you can already have a way of calculating well of kind of impact that will have on the company. Okay. In terms of the accretion, it's a little bit more difficult to answer you, but what we see is that it does have a positive accretion in the first few years in terms of net income of, I'd say, between 2 and 3%. I'd say that Anna can give you a little bit more of detail to each one of you about this, but that's, I would say, the main thing I would say.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. The next question we have today comes from the line of Gonzalo Sanchez Bordona from KaiserBank. Please go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon, everyone. Just a couple of questions on this transaction, too, on my side. I think in the presentation you referred that there were some expectations on some auctions to be held in Chile for more transmission lines or something like that in the next few months or years. I just wanted to understand what kind of visibility you have on those and if you believe that you would be able to add incremental growth on this transaction with that. And also just wanted to understand as my second question on how this fits within the investment plan that you have in the strategic plan. So is this all that you are doing internationally, or are you planning to do any more transactions, or what's your view on this regard? Thank you.
So, Gonzalo, I can give some color. The information that was there was also to explain to you that Chile is a growth market and that there is growth coming. As of now, we are completely focused on this company that we acquired, and our concern is going to be in integrating well the company and understanding this. So this is what our priority is now. It is good that you are investing in a country where there are recurring growth opportunities. So that was more the point. It will not take away anything from the fact that this is not now going to be our main focus, is to concentrate in terms of the integration of this. The opportunity and these opportunities to grow, they are completely public. So they are published by the Chilean government that, with a lot of time ahead, puts out the information on what the new projects in terms of electricity are going to be. So we all know, and everybody that follows the Chilean market knows exactly when, and we know in this case, I don't know if it's September or October, when they are going to come, and next year it's going to be again. So they have this normal, let's say, process of putting out the information, which is completely public. We can send you the link for you if you want to go and check, but that was more the point of the thing. Apart from it, it fits completely. I'd say that this is what is fitting completely. So we did this investment is completely within the envelope that we set, and now we are not concentrating on anything else apart from the fact that we want to integrate the company, and that's it. So we like to do things in steps. We like to do things in a safe way, in a conservative way, and this is what we want to do now. Thank you, Gonzalo.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. As a reminder, to ask a question over the phone today, please press star, then one on your telephone keypad. The next question today comes from the line of Jorge Guimarães from JB Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon. Thank you very much for taking my question. I had four. Firstly, do you have any idea of these solar auctions that are being held in Portugal these days? Do you already have some expectation about the potential impact on CapEx? This would be the first one. Second, are there any developments about the project of interconnection with Morocco? Thirdly, these investments in Chile, could they mean that you are an inorganic growth opportunities will be completely directed for foreign investment, meaning no longer interested in electricity low voltage concessions in Portugal? And finally, fourth one, if you allow me, what would be the cost of debt that you are considering for these 2-3% EPS accretion? Thank you very much.
Hi, good afternoon. This is Rocco Cesar speaking. For your first question on the solar auction, well, the information we have that we can share is the same as you can find in the press, because the auction is still ongoing, so it's going to be finished today. There is lots of competition on this auction, and what we have seen so far is that the prices are being quite aggressive. The prices that are being offered by the bidders. Regarding your question specifically on the impact on the CapEx, this specific auction today has not an impact on what we have already foreseen. What will have an impact, of course, is going to be the plan until 2030 and the new auctions that the government has announced that it wants to launch in the near future. Those will definitely need some increase in our CapEx plan. We are just finalizing the analysis. This is not yet public, but it's going to have a positive impact on our CapEx.
Well, just I have no idea of any metric of CapEx per megawatt or something like that.
We don't have that figures yet so far, completely defined. Hmm.
Okay, regarding Morocco, as we always been saying, you know, this is a project that it's in the hands of the governments of both countries. There is a study being developed. We don't have any feedback for the moment on the results of that phase, and that's going to be, you know, the moment that when they finish the study, that will trigger, let's say, the political discussions between the two countries, and the decision if they will or not go ahead with the project. We are doing our job, you know, the study is being moving, but we, you know, for the moment, we still, you know, this is an area where we always said, you know, there is a possibility, but, you know, the governments are the ones who need to decide. We don't have it as part of our, let's say, budgets for the coming years. But if of course, we have an opportunity to develop the projects, we are very interested, and we will. Regarding Chile, as Gonzalo already explained, in Chile, this project fits perfectly in what we said we want to do. You know, it's in our perspective, is the right type of geography. Regulation is predictable. The country economy is quite solid. Solid, you know, the political system also very mature, and we decided to start with Eletrogas a couple of years ago. The experience has been very positive. We, you know, being there helps to track other opportunities. We found this one. We submitted our offer. We won, and now we want to make it work. As we said before, you know, we are not looking now into doing something, you know, in the coming months. You know, the future is the future. We don't know what's going to happen, because, you know, the key priority now, as we said, is making sure we take control of the asset. We keep doing a good job with the asset. You know, we have very good resources here to help on that, and I'm sure we will do a great job. Regarding other opportunities for growth, you know, Portugal, you know, it's the opportunities are extremely limited, and especially the ones that we can really look into. And at the moment, we have, you know, you refer the low voltage concessions. No, nobody knows when the tender will be launched, the terms of the tender. You know, we tend to be very, very focused on what we do, and we don't get distracted easily. You know, we have no plans for the moment to go after other opportunities. This is where we are. You know, we did Eletrogás, we did Portgás. We keep doing a fantastic job in Portugal. Portugal remains, you know, 97% of what we do. That's where we have our focus. It's a very solid business, and we don't see nothing that should change that. And that's how we operate.
Relating to that funding question that you asked, I'd say that funding is done in normal, I'd say, market conditions. The idea we have is to fund this now through Portugal first, midterm, until we have then, and we'll look into the chance to finance this locally with non-recourse instruments. But now it's going to be funded through Portugal. I'd say it's normal kind of cost of funding of, I don't know, 70 to 100 bps above what is normal market reference rates. I wanted to actually to clarify one thing, which I don't know if some of you are going to ask or not, but we saw that in some of the reports published, there was a little bit of confusion in terms of the price, because the price that we put out is the equity price, so it's the price paid for the shares, the amount that we all refer to, the $167 million. There is not a very large amount of debt, but there is some debt. So there is around 25 million of that, 24.9 to be precise. So the EV is 192.4. I just wanted to clarify that because I didn't want to mislead anybody in terms of multiples or anything. We saw that perhaps there was not complete clarity in all, in everybody about that. So I just wanted to take the opportunity to make that crystal clear. Okay? Thank you.
Thank you very much. Once again, as a reminder, to ask a question over the phone today, please press star, then one on your telephone keypad. The next question today comes from the line of George Alonso from Societe Generale. Please go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon. Just to understand, so now what you have said about the equity and the debt, so if we add the EV you paid plus 60 million capex you will invest in order to get around $14 million EBITDA by 2023, that means that you are about to pay in 16 times still EV EBITDA in 2023. It looks a little bit high, unless you are missing something about the future growth on EBITDA due to the tariffs or the capex expected there, or because the remaining useful life is really long, and then that can justify such a big multiple, even still in 2023, just to be sure I'm not missing here and nothing. Thank you.
No, you are not missing anything. The issue of being high or not is because you are also comparing this to Europe, which has a lot of differences when you look at Chile. So, I would say that the main one is growth. But let me start to tell you about regulatory stability, regulation in Chile. Typically, when you do a greenfield, you get a rate which is set for 20 years. So that is something which is a little bit different. Then after the 20 years, it's a four-year cycle, but it's very different. The second thing I would add, even compared to Portugal, it has a slightly better country risk, but it's far away. So for us, we view it in a different way, but in terms of valuation, it is what it is. But third, I would refer the high growth of this. So you say you are completely saying it's correct. So when you compare to transactions made in Chile, this is, I'd say, the lower compared to comparables in the market. The only one that is below 20 times was actually a minority stake that was bought some time ago. So there is a lot of explanations. The rates of return are difficult to compare. So when you want to try to make that comparison, it's not easy. It's a different scheme. The feeling we have, and that's why we also made the acquisition, is that they are slightly higher than they are here, and it is exactly why, and that is what we need to have, is a slightly higher rate to justify the fact that we are investing abroad. But the main explanation, I'd say, is the fact that in this case, you are almost doubling the asset base, not doubling, but increasing materially the asset base. So we do not see the EV multiple as high as you say. We see it in line and actually below. They are different worlds and different risks, and it's very difficult for you to compare the EVs. It is when you do the DCF and you do those calculations that you have to take into account that. And we are convinced, because we did that, that this is a value-accretive operation for our shareholders. Last thing that I wanted to say in terms of regulation is that this is a perpetual concession, unlike most of the ones that you compare to here. So there's a lot of small details that explain why multiples tend to be higher than that, which does not mean that they are high. They are higher. Okay? I hope I helped.
Thank you very much. Once again, star then one if you'd like to ask a question over the phone. We have a follow-up question here from Sara Piccinini from Mediobanca. Please go ahead.
Yes, hi. Thank you again for taking my questions. Again, sorry, on the accretion, when you talk about 2%-3%, is this already in 2020, or is this an average for the period 2020-2023? Because if I see the EBITDA growing so much, I would expect more accretion going forward rather than in the short term. So if you can justify that. And then the second question is on the impact on net debt that you expect in 2020. Is this meaningful? How much is the impact on net debt EBITDA that we should expect in 2020? Thank you.
Yes, you are right. You are right. That when I told you those 2%-3%, they start on is something that starts already in 2020. As you move in time, in our model, we actually have accretions which are higher than those that range. Okay? In terms of accretion of net debt to EBITDA, we are in the, I'd say, the 0.2 to 0.3 range of increase going forward. So it's not completely stable, but I'm not going to give you. But I'd say that they are ballparking that figure. So we were, as always, not always very mindful. Although we may not all agree, we are always very mindful of two things. On one side, of the profitability of the asset or returns, and also the impact it has in terms of accretion of results. And on the other side, we are also very mindful, as always, on the impact it has in terms of credit metrics, as this is a core objective of ours to maintain as investment grade and to maintain the levels that we have currently. Thank you.
Many thanks.
Thank you very much. As a final reminder, it's star in one if you'd like to ask a question over the phone today. Thank you very much. There are no further questions.
Okay. So if there are no further questions, I guess I'll have a lot of work after this call is over. I'll be waiting for your personal questions. If not, have a great weekend. Thank you. Bye.